Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host,
Christopher Houston, and we're here with Stephen Hudgens. And I hope I pronounced that right, Stephen. If I didn't, I apologize. I'm lousy with pronunciation sometimes. Stephen is actually a fairly well-known gentleman across the community. I'll have him explain a little bit more about that. But he is a director of many, many things, including working with MUFON. And he's got some incredible experience with UFOs and the field of investigation. A little bit of everything. Welcome, Stephen. I appreciate you taking the time. I apologize to you and the listeners about the technical issue. But if you've ever been on radio, you know how that goes sometimes.
Yes, I had my own show for about 6 years, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. I listened to your show, actually, for a little while. You did an excellent job. You had a lot of unique shows.
I tried to be across the spectrum as much as I could. I mean, you know, when you talk about UFOs two or three times, it becomes repetitious, so you have to kind of broaden it out to more interesting things.
Yeah, you got to venture out into a little bit of everything. It's the same thing with my show. I mean, I concentrate a lot on paranormal investigators, but you can only say so much about paranormal investigators in the ghost field before you have to kind of venture out into the whole world of the paranormal, so to speak.
That's very true. It's good to be here, too.
So I guess let's just start from the beginning. What really got you involved in the unexplained, I guess? That's what I like to call it a lot of times, because the paranormal is such a vast field. It covers virtually everything unexplained at one point or another.
Well, it was, I would say, mostly curiosity as a young kid. I try to think back when I first started reading into this thing, but I wasn't even 10 years old, I'm sure. I was a young little kid. And I started picking up on my grandmother's little newspaper that she had. It was the Inquirer. And I don't know if they still have that anymore, but they had the most bizarre articles in there about Bigfoot and ghosts and Loch Ness monsters. As anything you wanted to talk about, it was in there. And I was just thinking about this. Of course, I was believing every bit of it. I mean, it was in the paper. There it is. I was believing it all, and I was reading it all. And they had UFOs in there once in a while. But that's where I first got started into it as a little kid with nothing else to do.
I guess it kind of grows on you. I mean, I can relate with that a little bit. Growing up as a kid, you see the magazines. And, well, I grew up in the X-Files phase. So, I mean, from the age of, I think, 17 to about, I don't even remember how long the X-Files went on, but at least 10 years. I remember watching that, and then before you had that, my dad was a big fan of a lot of every other shows, including the short-lived show Project Blue Book that was on a long time ago. So I can understand that definitely. You tend to fall into it, and it just becomes interesting after a certain point, all the unusual things that make you think about it.
Yes, and then it starts turning boring. And that's the bad part of it. It starts boring you out, and because you're really not getting anywhere with it. The same things that the same questions we have now or then, we still have now today. There's nobody's answering the questions.
That's actually a very valid point. You're really quite correct. It seems like after a certain point, we've just gotten all across the board. It's not just in UFO investigation, but even in paranormal investigation all around, we've kind of gotten, I hate to use the term, but stale in some ways. It seems like the same questions are there and the same repetitive motions are going on, rather than trying to dig in and go, okay, well, I know I've asked these questions, but let's kind of really dig in deep to find out what it's all about.
Well, that's very true. I think we have run against the wall, and we can't get past that wall. And I don't know what the answer to that is, but there's a point where you reach and you can't get any further. And I don't know. Everybody's talking about disclosure this, disclosure that. I don't believe that's going to happen anytime soon.
Well, even if it does on disclosures, if you think about it from the government standpoint, what are you really going to see? Are they going to open up and see a lot of things, or are they going to send you a bunch of things that are all blacked out in the first place that basically says what we already know sometimes, and that is, I don't know.
That's very true. There people come forward all the time from, oh, I work for the government this and government that, and I work on these programs here, and I'm going to start the disclosure and tell you a few things. But I was in the military, and when I hear these people come forward, oh, I worked on these secret programs, and I'm going to tell everybody about it. Well, I think those people need to go to jail.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with that a little bit, too. Being a subcontractor and working with a lot of government offices, there's just a lot of things you don't share. Even on my end, and I didn't even get a lot of information. I just got – we were kind of a do-what-you're-told type people. You know, you're subcontracted in. You're told, go in, do this. You say, okay, that's about it.
Yes. And you walk the chalk line or you don't have that job any longer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know that you don't step out of turn in some of those situations just because it's all top secret in the first place in a lot of cases. So even if you're a guy that doesn't really know what's going on at all and you're supposed to just go in there and turn on the lights and walk out, that's what you do.
Yes, that's right. That's what you do.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
Yep, it is. It's a pretty cut and dry job, actually. You know, you're told what to do. You cross, you walk that line, you do that, you go home, you don't ask.
Very true.
So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that we're in an age where we're going to get a lot of things out. But I also know from working with a lot of government offices how that's going to work. So it's even if they release a lot of information, it's not going to be the information people think.
No, it's not. It's not. Not at all.
And there's a difference between the word disclosure and conspiracy.
Of course.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your experience a little bit, what you've done, where you've went, some of your more interesting situations. I'm sure you've got some incredible stories you could probably tell.
I have a few weird ones, that's for sure. I'm starting to get cold chills already. I've had more, I will say, paranormal incidents, you know, like a handful, to no UFO incidents. And maybe that I've always told people, I said, maybe that's why I hang off and hang out into the UFO part of this, other than the paranormal part of it. This house that I live in, it was built in 1936. It's an old house, and it's built on the same street that I grew up on. I mean, it's just the house always been here, and I eventually bought it and I'm living in it. And this house used to be the spookiest thing in the world. And for instance, I worked out of town a lot. My wife and kids were here and I'd be gone and they would hear something banging on the side of the house. Just boom, 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 rattling the windows in the house is hitting so hard and wake them up. And this went on for about, I don't know, 5 or 6 times with this boom, boom thing. And then it would quit. And this went on for off and on for a year. And one night I heard it. I was home and I heard it. I was always making excuses for it, trying to figure out what it was. And I was, ah, well, she's hearing something next door or whatever. No, it was right here on the side of the house and it was hitting hard. And I went over to the back window, my kid's bedroom, and I had my .45 in my hand and I peeked out the blinds and it hit again, boom, 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 right there and right there where my face was. And I have an outside light, you know, and there's nobody standing there, nobody beating on the house. There's nobody there. So it quit. And next morning I went out there looking around. And I was looking on the ground for footprints and things of that nature. Then I decided I'd hit the house to recreate the sound. And I had to hit the house hard. But it hasn't happened since. And that was years and years ago. And I have a room up in the attic up here, and it runs the full length of the house. It was about 30 feet. And we'd be watching TV downstairs, that kind of thing, and we'd hear something run across the attic floor. Boom, 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 boom. And it would stop at the stairs. And once in a while, we'd see a shadow. And never figured out what that was. And it didn't happen that often, but it happened. And I eventually put cameras all around the house, and when I did that, all the stuff stopped. I don't know what that had to do with it, but anyway. The real spooky part for me was I was sleeping late Saturday morning. I was off work that day. I'm tired. I'm sleeping in. It's like about 9 o'clock, something of that nature. And I wake up, my wife is watching TV, and she's watching the I Love Lucy show. And of all my hates, I hate the I Love Lucy show. And here's that music going, and it's waking me up. I'm kind of, well, man, we should turn that thing down. I think she turned it up on purpose. No, I'm just kidding. But it's time for me to get up out of bed. I was going to get out of bed, and I couldn't move. And that was really weird, because that's the first time that ever happened to me. I could not move. And then while I'm laying there trying to get up, I feel something like walking up on the bed. And if you ever had a cat, it kind of similar to a cat walking up on the bed, and they kind of test where they're walking and that kind of thing. It was walking softly, but this had to be a big cat because the steps were on each side of my body, and it was coming up toward me, and it was invisible. I couldn't see what it was. Well, at this point, I'm starting to get excited because there's something climbing up on the bed with me. It's daylight. I can look down. There's nothing there, and I can't move. Well, like I said, I've read all these ghost stories and all this kind of stuff. I knew that whatever was going on, I didn't want any part of it. So I'm sitting there struggling, trying to get loose. And finally, I shoved myself off into the bed, covers me, that thing and all, and it was on. And when I got up, you know, whatever it was is gone. So I didn't have any more of that. And things are similar to this that happened to my wife. She has felt something like lay down on the bed next to her, and she said, and it was holding her hand. She said if she had to, it was like a little kid that kind of laid down on the bed, and it's in a kind of a darky shape. I guess you could call it shadow people or whatever. I don't know. I didn't see it. But she said when she woke up and kind of gasped, you know, kind of surprised her, it disappeared. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on in this house. But whatever it is, it's gone. It hadn't happened in a long time. Hmm. But it just those type of little weird things. You know, 10 times maybe the entire time we've been here.
You know, it's going to sound terrible when I say this, but it's kind of good to hear another version of things that have, because my first experience that made me get into the paranormal in the first place was similar to that. We lived in a house that was built over top of an old farm, and the first experience I ever had was similar to that. I was physically, I saw something come into the room, was physically actually held down for a little while, or thrown actually, wasn't really held down. So I can relate a little bit about how that can be scary. It also fascinates mm-hmm. you when you're first diving into it, because I really, for a while, I thought I was nuts. I mean, you know, these things don't happen, right?
I've heard that, yes.
And then, of course, obviously, when I got past that stage and a lot of other things were happening in the house for many, many years, and even scared off a psychiatrist that decided to come into the home, at one point I realized, you know, there's a lot more to this.
Yes.
So it's an interesting story. It's always good to hear the haunted aspect of things. It's scary when you're going through it, even when you know at one point or another either it's not going to harm you anymore or it's gone. When you start looking back at it, you still remember the scary moments.
Well, yes, the only scary part of the whole thing was just the fear of the unknown, because it wasn't threatening, mm-hmm. and it didn't throw things or anything. It was just it's kind of, I don't know, just a pain in the neck, I guess. And now the incident that really, really, really bothers me, and I'm starting to get goosebumps again, happened to me when I was 18 years old, 17 or 18. I believe it was 18 because I was driving by then. I had this family that I knew. They lived out in Justin, Texas, which is, I don't know, probably 30, 40 miles straight up north from Fort Worth. And I'd go out there on the weekends because that's my girlfriend and her three brothers and their family and their grandmother. They were all there in this one house. And I'd go out there and spend the weekends with them. And one particular night, this is an old house. I mean, it was old house. It was a three-story house, big porch, and a big foyer going down through the middle of the house. Is like a combination living room, dining room, and then on the outside was a back porch that was screened in, and the bathroom was back there. Bedrooms on each side, and then the kitchen was off to the right hand side. And this particular night, I was up in the front bedroom. We'd been playing cards and stuff like that, and everybody got tired. And along about midnight, we all went to bed. And I was up here in this room. I was asleep, and all of a sudden, I just woke up. And was it time to go to break? Never mind. I just woke up, and I'm sitting there laying there, you know, what I heard a noise or something that woke me up. And I said, well, you know, I was trying to think of what that noise was. And it was like either a stack of pans or a stack of dishes had fallen off the table of the counter and into the floor. I would imagine it was pots and pans is what it sounded like, because nothing broke. And I'm sitting there listening to that. And I said, well, somebody, I'll get up in a minute and see what that is. Well, nobody got up. So I'm laying there. I said, oh, well, I'm not going to worry about it. So I'm trying to go back to sleep. Then I started hearing the floor popping and creaking. You know how old floors are when you're walking across them? Uh-huh. I said, well, somebody's up. Here they come. You know, they're going to get up. Well, it was going real slow. And I said, well, somebody's sneaking around out there. I said, maybe there's somebody broke into the house, you know. And so I'm laying there thinking about all this kind of thing. Is what am I going to do now? Because this thing was walking down the wall and stopped at the door right there to my bedroom. And it started opening, turning the doorknob. And I'm laying there. I said, somebody going to sneak in here. One of these guys going to come here and try to scare the crap out of me. And I'm going to be ready for them. That's what I had. And the door opened. And all this cold air rushed into the room. It's like opening up a freezer. Well, here we go. Back to the Enquirer again. I knew that was a ghost coming in the room. And I did not want any part of this ghost coming in the room. So I slammed my eyeballs shut. I did not want to see what it was. It wasn't making any noise. Nobody made any noise. Nobody screaming. Nobody hollering. Nobody came over to throw me out of the bed. None of that kind of thing was going on. And I started hearing this thumping noise in my ears. You know, just a thumping noise. And I was holding on to my chest, and that thumping noise was my heart. I was about to explode. Whatever it was scaring the crap out of me. The next thing I know, I woke up the next morning. Jumped out of bed. It was about 8 o'clock. Jumped out of bed, went running in there. Everybody's in there having breakfast like nothing going on. And I said, about time you got up and all this kind of thing. And I said, was there anything messed up in the kitchen over here? They looked at me kind of funny. No. No pots and pans or anything running around? No. Okay, so I just kind of blew it off. No biggie. About a year later, here I am on the fantail of this USS new DDE-818 destroyer that I'm on, because now I'm in the Navy, right? And we're back there smoking cigarettes, talking, cussing, all that kind of thing, and telling ghost stories. I said, hey, I got one for you. So I started telling them about this. And when I got to the point, I'm getting goosebumps again. When I got to the point to where I woke up the next morning, I'm asking myself, how in the world did I go to sleep when I had adrenaline pumping out of my ears? And I went to sleep. Yeah, right. I don't know what happened. Have no idea. Talk about missing time or whatever. There you are. I don't know what happened. And for about 2 years after that, I had dreams of standing out in a field, dark everywhere. And I see this object in the sky, and I always describe it as a box kite with Christmas tree lights all around it. And I had that dream for about a couple of years, and then I quit having it anymore. Then I got mixed up in the MUFON, and it was probably 10 years after that, and I'm just guessing, I went on an abduction. This woman called out, and she wanted to know if there were any support groups for abduction experiencers in the DFW area. I said, no, none one that I'm aware of. And she said, well, I need to talk to somebody. Can you come and talk with me? I said, sure. I got her address and went over. She lived over in Dallas. I got her address and I said, I'll be over there. And I kept in contact with her and pulled up to her house. And I don't remember what part of town it was, but she had this big house, big porch, stuff like that. So I walked up to her and she met me on the front porch. And right away, she kind of extended her arm and stuck her hand out, you know, like the blocking motion, you know, like, so I immediately stopped. And I was about, I don't know, 10 feet from her. And she was a very tall woman. She's like 6'6" anyway. I mean, she's tall. And she was standing on this porch that's 4 feet taller than me, or rather 4 feet off the ground. So I had to look up about 10 feet in the air just to see her in the face, you know. And so I'm standing down here. We're talking back and forth. She's asking me questions. I'm talking this. And every once in a while, she'd extend her arm out. And I didn't pay attention to that. She says, okay, come on in the house. I said, all right. Went in the house, and we started talking. And she's telling me about her abduction experiences. And I'm sitting there taking notes and stuff like that. And then she stopped. And she says, why don't you tell me about your abduction experience? And my eyeballs went up. And I said, I've never had one. She says, yes, you have. You just don't remember it.
Huh.
And I don't know where she came up with that or any of that kind of thing. And anyway, she told me when she was extending her hand out or whatever, she was reading my aura or whatever. I don't really know about all of that. And she says, your aura was just fine. That's why I allowed you in the house. I said, okay. And she says, yes, you have. You've been abducted. But anyway, about 10 minutes later, I'm already out of there. I called the little meeting off. I said, I got to go. Thanks. And I never heard from her again. But when I think about this little incident, I get the heebie-jeebies and people. Travis Walton said to me, he says, Steve, maybe you need to do a regression. I said, no. I said, no, I don't need to redo it. I don't even want to know what happened with that. And he said, yeah, he said, that's the same way I am. I'm not going to regress because... well, we're getting sidetracked, but anyway, I'm not going to get regressed and don't want to be regressed. I don't want to know what happened in those 4 or 5 hours, whatever it was. But anyway, those kind of things kind of stick with you.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you really. I mean, if you think about it and you do a regression session, then you're opening up a wound there that may be disturbing. And why bother with that hey, you're still operating, you're still fine in life right now. Why bother looking at something that might open up something that scares the crap out of you?
that's true. That's the way I look at it. If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I had a incident a long time ago when I was 16 that I tell people about, and I've had a few people say, you know, well, you should look into it further, and it's kind of the same thing. We were outside, a friend of mine and me, when I was 15, 16 years old, sitting on mom's car, chatting at about 12 o'clock. Remember seeing a light come down. Now, I'm not saying that this is a UFO. May or may not have been a UFO. Have no idea. It's just one of those things that made you startled for a moment, and afterwards you think about it and go, well, it's kind of like you said, I really don't want to know, but it's a story. The light came and flew over top of us, and I remember seeing the bright light, and then I don't really remember anything else until about 12:45. Mm-hmm. We go in the house and the family was like, well, you guys we thought it was only like 4 minutes or so, you know, we thought maybe a helicopter flew over or something, blinded us. We had to go in and tell everybody. And they're like, you've been out there for like 45 minutes. Well, both of us had no idea what happened.
Right.
So
it's strange how that works.
Yeah. It was a unique situation that makes you just kind of wonder. It's kind of one of those things that makes you want to say, so to speak.
Well, it does. It does. Makes you want to say, what in the hell happened?
Yeah, and definitely. So you were responsible for developing individual teams for MUFON at one point and doing, you know, kind of heading investigations and so forth. So I'm sure that in itself is that's got to be an incredible task. I know that just trying to manage one paranormal team here for me is a bear.
Right. We had 40 field investigators in Texas back in, it was about 2006 or 4 or something like that. And that's when the STAR team was starting to get kind of romping around. And we kind of had, so I sat down and I started trying to figure out exactly where everyone was located in the state of Texas. So I just got a map down and started pinpointing everyone. And some of these guys are, the section directors are the ones I was really looking for. And then you have field investigators under that. And I figured out where they all were. They're basically down the Interstate 35 corridor and the Interstate 45 corridor. That's 35 is basically straight down the middle of Texas going north and south. And 45 goes like from Dallas down to Houston, down to the southeast. But I started pinpointing all of them. And then I got to thinking about the term section director, and that usually was based on one county. And I'm sitting there, well, if it's just one county, why isn't it called a county director? So I just extended it. I started giving a bunch of people a bunch of counties, and so therefore they got a section. And some of them didn't like that a bit. But we ended up doing it that way, and it started working out pretty good. They were thinking that I was going to expect them to travel to all of these places where these investigations were going on, and that wasn't the case at all. We have three different categories on cases, 1, 2, and 3, depending on how, I don't know, important they are, I suppose. And category threes, that would be the ones that we would want to be traveling to. But they weren't really that important that we had to do all the traveling. So it ended up being pretty good. And then Stephenville came along. That was an episode all in of itself. And it was almost a circus, but it ended up being pretty good anyway. It's, I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but, down in Stephenville, it's about 2008 or 2009. A few people had some sightings down there, and then depending on who they were, which they were important people, it stimulated the, I forget who started it the first time. the AP got a hold of it. And when that happened, it went nationwide, these reports. And then when that happened, all of the newscasters wanted to get in on the action. And they kept asking the people at the Stephenville paper, because they're the ones that were doing the reports and put them in the paper. They were asking them about it. And then next thing I know, MUFON starts getting involved, and they wanted to know what we knew about it. And we had received a few reports, not a whole lot, just a few, like a couple. And we didn't see a big emergency until we found out that several hundred people are starting to turn in reports to the Stephenville Tribune down there. So that's when we got involved with it. And we made arrangements to have a meeting, had it posted in the paper. So we were going to have a meeting down there in Dublin. So we went down there in Dublin, we kicked the meeting off, I think it was 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock or something. And we had a room down there that was offered to us. And the room, it filled up fast. And I found out later that it had caused the only traffic jam that Dublin, Texas has ever known in the last 50 years. I mean, they only have like two red lights and those things were jammed up. But I remember going up, the first thing I thought, you know, a lot of people, but I got my way up to the podium up there, and we had a strict rule that we didn't want anybody coming in there filming it and recording it, because we didn't, you know, people, they'll run in there and they'll take these DVDs and they'll sell them and all this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want any of that going on. And I walked up to that podium they had fixed up there, and I looked at that podium, and it looked like a cactus with so many microphones stuck on it. And that guy, what? I said, who's recording this? And that's when I looked up and I scanned in front of me there, and there's CBS, NBC, ABC. Everybody was out there. They had a camera on a tripod, and man, I said, what in the world have we got into here? So we were talking about this, talking about that, and so at one point I asked the audience, I said, well, how many people here want to have had a witnessed a sighting report? And the whole room raised their hand, and then there was 300 people in that room. I know it was maxed out because they wouldn't let so many in because it was overloaded already. So there was 6 or 7 field investigators there. And for the rest of the day, we took UFO reports of the people that have seen things. And it the surprising part was it was just wasn't something that happened, you know, a couple of weeks ago. This stuff's been going on forever. And these people are coming in there talking about reports of 30 years old, 20 years old. But afterwards, after we had taken all the reports and talked with all the people and studied the area and really saw what was going on, you find out that Dublin, Texas and Stephenville, Texas are surrounded by military operating zones. And that's what you find. What that is that's where all of the Air Force fighter jets come to that area to practice. So, and of course they're dropping flares and all this kind of stuff and flying around at midnight, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are seeing most of the time. But there is the occasion when the flying Walmart comes through. And I don't say that amusingly. I mean, it's an object that's half a mile, 1 mile wide and half a mile the other direction. And it's about the size of a Walmart building. And it flies through, and it flies through real slow. And, you know, I would kind of blow it off. But it was seen by 5 Stephenville police officers. And they weren't standing together. They were spread out around the town, around the city. And this thing slowly flew over Stephenville, Texas. And they all saw it at the same time. And so you got to sit there and think about that. Well, they saw something, and they're trained observers. They're not just going to make something up. And they didn't come forward with this for quite a while because they didn't want their name. I still don't know what their name is. But I know that I know a person that does know who they are, and I never have asked her who they are. But they did see this large craft go through the area. And so you have to sit there and ask yourself, okay, because I asked myself this. I said, why would like an alien race take a machine this large and it may be their only way home? Why would they fly it through a military operating zone with the Planet of the Apes flying jets that have something that could injure or destroy their ship and only needs to go home? Why would they do that? I always ask myself that question. So I have to think that it's not really a spaceship from outer space. I'm thinking it's our own equipment. That's where I'm leaning. So it puts a lot of value to the term secret space program.
That's just, you know, no, I would agree with that. This is a debate I've had with many, many people. And I mean, knowing some of the secrecy that I know the government does have and knowing why they have that secrecy, and also being close to an Air Force base growing up, because we were right down the road from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for quite a long period in time, who tested a lot of flight equipment between there and Mansfield, I can certainly see where, you know, you see a lot of things at night, especially when they're doing this, because you have flight tests, like you said, you have flare tests on top of that with a regular aircraft. Mm-hmm. If they have any type of other equipment that they're testing, a lot of times they're not going to just say, hey, community, we're flying something you're not supposed to know about. Mm-hmm.
First thing they're going to do is put a big light on it.
Yep, big light on it, and you're probably going to hear it a little bit. You might even see, if it's early drone testing especially, because some of the early drones were, I mean, they'd fly around quicker than all get out. You might see it jumping around in weird patterns. You might see all kinds of crazy stuff. So I would tend to agree with you there that a lot of what people see is just military stuff that 99% of the time they just haven't came out to the public about yet.
That's right. Let me give you something you can debate them with. You ready for this?
Shoot.
Okay. I got some questions to ask. And do you have callers? Can people call in? It doesn't make any difference. Let me ask you a question, because I always ask people this. How long was mankind in an animal drone vehicle?
In an animal drone vehicle?
Yes.
quite a number of years. I couldn't give you the exact number, but I know it's quite a number of years.
It's estimated at 2,500 years. Okay, from the time that man stepped off that animal-drawn vehicle and stepped onto the moon, how many years is that?
At least another couple of hundred years, maybe more.
65. Now, 65 years passed from the time we stepped off the animal-drawn vehicle. Okay, now why is it that after 120 years, are we still getting 21 miles to a gallon in these damn cars we're driving?
That's a very good question to ask when we are capable of going so much further than that.
And why are we, what is it now, $30 trillion in debt?
Yeah. Yep. The money's going somewhere.
The money's going somewhere, and it certainly isn't going into the car systems.
Nope.
It's going into the secret space program.
Yeah, well, it would be, very plausible that if you think about it, the next big evolution for the human race is outer space. I mean, That's where we're going to find new minerals. That's where we're going to find new power sources. That's where we're going to find new energy sources. That's where we're going to colonize. So why wouldn't we have concentrated on that in the military? And if we did, we probably wouldn't share it with the public until it was time to.
No, they don't want to share it with the public because the public is too afraid of their own shadow. They don't want to know that there is life on another planet. They don't want to know that because it doesn't say that in the Bible. And they don't want 30% or maybe 40% of the estimated people that are religious to commit suicide once they find out there's another race out there somewhere.
Or more than one. I mean, it's a vast galaxy.
Even if it's just one. And if anybody wants to think that there's no other life anywhere in this universe, I'm sorry, they're drinking the wrong Kool-Aid.
Well, it'd be naive to actually think that we're the only intelligent life. I mean, if our planet can develop intelligent life, regardless of, you know, what religion, however you want to believe it got here, then why couldn't something else develop exactly the same life or something even more intelligent than us? Or, you know, there's got to be life all over the place somewhere.
Well, that's true. I'm going to give you something else to debate with. This is my own opinion about the paranormal realm. I try to separate UFOs from the paranormal, and I do that for a reason. It's because it's called the giggle factor. It's what we call it, is the giggle factor. And that's why it's never taken serious. And I'm trying to separate the UFO part from the paranormal part so that the UFO thing will be taken more seriously, where the scientists will jump on board, which I don't think that's going to happen because the scientists are getting too much money from the government. But back to where I made a comment that we're not getting anywhere in the paranormal field. And I like to use Bigfoot as an example. A lot of people say, oh, I saw Bigfoot. And I have seen little photos and things from the Bigfoot hunters. And I saw one time. This guy, you wouldn't believe the things that I'm sent to me for my opinion. And a lot of people delete me after I give them my opinion. But this person sent me some photos of Bigfoot, right? The one that's taking the photographs is scared to death in their backseat of their car. And they're peeking over the seat of the backseat, looking out the front windshield, while Bigfoot is peeking over the hood, looking back at them. And I got a couple of photos. And then later on, of course, that's the only photos they have. I mean, I guess their phone broke when Bigfoot walked off or something. I don't know. But my iPhone works pretty good. I can get about 500 photos in about 2 seconds if I just hold the button down. But, there was one point. The passenger window had a bunch of, mucus, slobber, whatever you want to call it, all over the window. And I asked them, did they take a sample? No, we went to the car wash and washed it all off. So we have one photo of a Bigfoot that's supposedly 8 feet tall peeking over the hood of a car. Now, what is this Bigfoot sitting down and peeking over the hood. I mean, I don't know. I don't see that happening. So that's the kind of thing I have to put up with. But anyway, I have a theory about all this kind of thing. The things that that are people that are actually seeing. I go back to the idea that the ET has been with us forever. There's drawings and things of ET around well before there were any kind of drawings of Bigfoot or elves or any of this other stuff. ET has been here forever. And their spaceships and their drawings have been here forever. And as a matter of fact, the first written report of an alien abduction. Any idea what that is?
You know, I actually have it in my research stuff, but I couldn't tell you it right off the top. I got a mound full of stuff. I do research all the time. I could probably dig it up, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
It may not be what you're thinking of. I'm thinking I'm going. It's when the Virgin Mary was taken up and impregnated.
Oh, no, I didn't even relate that one. I was thinking of it was a intermixed couple, I do believe, that I was thinking about. But
yes, I know who you're talking about. That's I'll think of their name in a minute, but that's the first reported written abduction experience. And a lot of people are going to get mad about that because by definition, God is an ET. ET is something that's not born on the earth. But anyway, ET's been here forever.
Yeah. Okay. And I can relate to that. I know a lot of religious people don't know how to relate to that, but if you think about it, God's not of this earth. A lot of the explanations from angels and so forth can relate to aliens. I mean, they are talking about bright lights coming from the sky and landing and interacting with human beings.
Yes, that's true. Very true. That's why I interview a lot of preachers. They have a lot of interesting things to say. they do. Let me get back to my deal here. I am kind of under the opinion, since we can't find any real evidence of Bigfoot, Dogman, and all of that kind of thing, other than basically your visual sighting of one. I mean, nobody has found any carcasses. No, there's no evidence other than a footprint. And if I can put down a footprint, anybody can put down a footprint. Matter of fact, my little brother used to do that stuff. He'd go out here to Deer Lake, and he made some great big long footprints, and and he has some fun with that. But that's what I'm saying. So I'm kind of the opinion that let's just say, for an example, here you are, you're asleep at night, and something wakes you up in your house, and you look up, and you see, you see the ghostly figure of someone that's dear to you that has passed away, and you see that. They're standing there looking at you, and then they turn and walk away. You're going to say, oh, well, I saw so-and-so, and I saw their ghost last night. Well, you're not going to think too much about it. Oh, well, not too big a deal. Okay, but if you woke up and you saw a reptilian ET standing there, you would have a completely different reaction. And it's the same as in the forest or whatever, a wooded area. If you see Bigfoot, oh, there's Bigfoot. Let's see if we can chase him down while he gets away from you. But if you see a reptilian or an ET, oh, you're going to have a different impression. So that's where I'm going with this. I'm thinking that what everyone is seeing is a mental projection of something that's not really there. That's why we can't find this thing.
You know, I've actually had that conversation quite recently with a few people in a university, especially when you have a lot of the sightings that are, a lot of people don't realize that most Bigfoot sightings are, I'm in a woods, it's at a certain time of day or night. You know, the deeper you get into a woods, the more psychological effect happens, the more you see things and hear things that aren't there, and the more that can affect you. Just like when you're hunting ghosts, excuse the term, I hate to use the word ghost hunter because paranormal investigation is a little bit different than what most people think. But it's still a psychological aspect. If I'm sitting in a old, dank, cold building, jail cell or whatever it is, and it's totally dark and I sit down, everything around me plays with me. I'll see shadows, I'll hear things, I'll be paranoid because the human instinct kicks in. So now you're seeing and hearing things that could be anything, to be honest with you.
that's very true. Very true. Yes. I've been on ghost hunts before, and I don't put a lot of logic in these, what do you call them? EVPs, the electronic thingy.
Yeah, electronic voice phenomena.
Yeah, electronic voice phenomena, because you don't learn anything from it. It's like every one of them is joking with you. That's why I don't go to Las Vegas and play on the games. They're all electronic, computer generated, and anybody can do anything with a computer. I'm not putting any money in something like that. It's just like these EVPs. It's electronic. Anybody with proper gear is going to be able to bleed into that thing. I don't believe in it. And there was this one time that I went over to with some ghost hunters, and they invited me along. I went along. Sure, I want to check this out. Well, they had a couple little EVP incidents over there, which I was not impressed with. And they had these little meters that they glow green or red or whatever when they pick up some kind of electric signal or something. Uh-huh. You probably know what they're talking, what they're called. We're walking around in one of these, and we go up. This actually is the little red courthouse over in Dallas. Supposed to be haunted. And the one guy I was with, he had this meter, and he walked in, and he stepped up on the stairs going to the second floor. And as soon as he stepped up on the stairs, his meter went red big time. And I stopped him, and I said, here, back down there, back down. And so he backed down, got off the stairs, and went back green again, or whatever it was. And I said, okay, take a step forward. He stepped forward and went red again. I said, okay, back down. So he came back. I said, now just don't stand on the stairs. Just extend your arm with the meter. And he did. And it didn't do anything. It didn't do anything until he stepped on the stairs. Uh-huh. So there's some kind of a static electricity thing going on. So yeah. that ruined his day on that one.
Yeah, I debunk their EMF meters. An EMF meter, especially the ones, because I know some things most people don't, that you commonly purchase that you've seen on major television shows, they don't work the way people think, and those spikes are generally designed to pick up on the quickest and easiest things that are all around you. So like you said, you're jumping up on the steps. There's some sort of electromagnetic spike. That spike could be anything right below the steps. It could be reacting to the body and the steps going up and down. Could be anything, because that meter is designed to give those pretty lights off so that people can go, oh, I got a ghost.
Yes, that makes me so glad I never bought one.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of those devices that are out there, and that's all they're designed to do.
I know this as a gentleman down in San Antonio. I've known him for a long time. He's a police officer. And he goes out on these ghost hunts and things, and he investigated this house because these people said, man, we go into this one room and we get sick, almost throwing up sick. I don't know what it is in that room, but we need someone to come over and find out what it is. So he took his crew over there, and they're looking around, and they got into this room, and they started feeling a little sick too, so they got out of the room real quick. And they eventually went under the house, and what they found was a cluster of electrical wires that were bundled under this this one room. And there was electrical activity going on in these wires. He said, I'm surprised it didn't burn this house down, because all of the plastic was off of the wires. They were exposed, and there was just a lot of electrical energy there. And that's what was making everybody sick. Uh-huh. So they got rid of that, and that took care of it.
Yeah, and I've seen that a lot, actually. Most of what I've done recently, about the past 6 or 7 years, is tag along with paranormal investigation teams, kind of get an idea so I can tell their story, observe, be able to make determinations on what may be going on here as opposed to what most people think.
Yes.
And I can tell you a lot of what a lot of people just go about. They see the TV shows, and don't get me wrong, I'm friends with a lot of the people on the TV shows. They're great people. But they see the TV shows and they assume, bam, that's how you do it. And that's not really the case. Those are there for entertainment purposes.
That's true. Very true.
But it's an amazing thing to look into. It's just real. I like to say, even though I know some people say pseudoscience, I like to say real paranormal studies a little bit different than what – it's not sitting in the dark chasing a ghost.
No, it isn't.
But people will catch up to that. They're getting wise.
Yes, they're getting wise, all right.
Let's take a few minutes, Stephen, to talk about a little bit about any avenues that, I mean, I don't know if you're writing any books. I don't know if you do any public events or anything like that. But if you do, I'd like the listeners to know where to find you.
Well, I'm so introverted. I don't have any books. Somebody's always telling me, you need to write a book. And I said, I wouldn't even know what to call it. And so, but no, I don't have any books in the makings, and I don't do any events. So I'm too introverted for that. And, I have to psych myself up just to do these radio interviews. I don't mind interviewing people, but, when someone's interviewing me, I really don't know. I don't have any questions. I don't know what the questions are going to be. And I'm just kind of, I don't know, opening up to whatever it is and don't know what to expect, I'm on Facebook, and seriously, I've been on Facebook for what, 10 years or so, and I'm seriously thinking about getting off of it. I mean, the people that are coming on this thing now in the last couple of years I don't want to tag people, but it's the millennials. They filthy mouthed and belligerent and man, and just, it's just pathetic. And, I have about 3,000 friends on my Facebook, and I'm on Facebook a lot. Oh, somebody's calling me. Oh, guess what? I'm not going to listen to that. Looks like I get a bunch of phone calls from people that, fake callers or whatever they are. And I play around with them a lot. the IRS one is the good one that I really, man, I had those people so mad at me, but anyway, Facebook, I'm about ready to get off of it. It's just, I have 3,000 members, and I was testing the theory. Someone said, well, that Facebook only lets your post go out to 25 people. So I said, okay. So I put up a post. I said, okay, all of you guys, anybody that's read this, just say on my friend list, say, yes. Well, so far, 53 people have said yes, and this post has been up for a week. So there may be something to all of that. I don't know. Just 53 people out of the 3,000 that are on my friend list said yes. I don't know. So anyway, I'm thinking about either reducing it down to those 53 people or just getting off Facebook altogether, because it's starting to be ridiculous. I mean,
well, a lot of the social media today, and I don't post as much as I used to, just because social media has gotten absurd. There's a lot of, I don't even know what to call it anymore, to be frankly honest with you. Psychological disease. That's the easiest way to explain it.
Well, I'm glad it's happening to somebody else. I was thinking I was all by myself.
No, I'm working with a professor friend of mine that he's putting together a book. He's been doing a study on social media, and he says that social media and designs like Facebook have created an undiagnosed psychological disease in itself. It's like,
I believe that.
A bunch of craziness just happens out of the blues. I don't even know where they get it half the time.
I heard some kind of report on that. Everyone is just like getting up first thing in the morning to go see how many likes they have on their post. And then Rush Limbaugh says, well, it's everyone's personal story, personal page, or personal life. Like they have with the, I forget those people's names. My daughter watches them all the time. Their own little world or whatever it is. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, well, I think that social media was a wondrous place to start doing connections, but it also gave a place for people to escape, change their personalities, be somebody else that they're not in real life, and it developed a personality of its own that it wasn't originally designed for. And a lot of people have really went out of their envelopes. So now, like you're saying, you're seeing a lot of foul-mouthedness, you're seeing a lot
of... Yes, women. Women and, doing it.
A lot of tag, I hate to use that term, but a lot of tag teaming. If somebody doesn't like somebody else, then five or six people just dive all over the person and they've never met them. I've seen all kinds of crazy things on Facebook and social media.
That's why my block list is so long.
Oh, yeah, I've got, I, I, I have maybe 1,700 people on my friends list, and I'll bet you I have the equivalent of that, if not larger, in my blocked list.
I never have counted them, but I know there's a lot of them on mine. I don't think I have that many. Maybe 500, maybe, but not that many.
Well, I've been I'm very lighthearted on the radio show, as you can tell, but I've also been in paranormal research for so long that I'm also very, very blunt when I go out and do a seminar, when I go out and speak with other people, and even when I try to coach people or tell people over Facebook, I just tell them the reality of what they're dealing with. And that has made a lot of friends. It's also made a lot of enemies throughout the years.
Yes, that's true. But if anybody ever wanted to get a hold of me, they can just go to Facebook, or they can email me. And if they want to email me, it's idoi@mufon.com.
Well, I know it's been a pleasure keeping you on here, Stephen, and it's been a wonderful conversation. Hopefully you enjoyed yourself, and you're more than welcome to come back anytime and talk about stories, or if you have anything you want to speak on, you know, just shoot over to Sarah there and let her know, and we'll make sure that we get you back on, definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, I haven't had a chance to do this because we have a long conversation, but I know we're running down to the end of the show, so you are listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations across the United States of America. I do encourage you, if you're going to go with the best, always go with Donald and BBS. They're a wonderful bunch of people. They'll take very good care of you. Another quick announcement, just so that you're aware, Ghost Sight will be launching here in the next couple of months. Ghost Sight is going to be your new area for unique equipment that, yes, that's right, shouldn't work at all. That's the motto. There's a reason behind that, so I want you to look into Joel Myers. I want you to ask him that motto. It's a very logical motto, believe it or not. I won't get into detail on it because I'm going to have him on the radio show to explain it in a little bit more detail at a later time. Next week's show will be another very interesting show. I know we are running down here to, it looks like, our last minute and a half or so. So I'm going to end this with, first off, thanking you very much, Stephen, for coming in. Do you have anything that you want to say to the listeners at the end?
Yes, I'll tell you what, if people are interested in the Disclosure Project, there's only one way to get disclosure done, and that's join MUFON. MUFON is the only investigating organization out there, and if I guarantee you, if MUFON had 3,000 or 3 million members that are voting members, I guarantee you we'd have disclosure.
You know, that's a very good point. Ladies and gentlemen, I think, I think you should join MUFON. In fact, I'm going to look into it. I've been curious about it. I thought about joining several times just because it's interesting. I don't know how it works, but I'll definitely I'm going to look into it. I might ask you a couple of questions somewhere along the line, shoot you over an email.
No problem. It's MUFON.com. Go join. Doesn't cost that much. Might be interesting.
Well, we will let you go, ladies and gentlemen. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. Stephen has been a very wonderful individual. I do encourage you to look him up, ask questions, shoot over any emails you need for him. And I'm going to end this the way I do every single week on Paranormal Truth and Reality. As you're learning today, in the paranormal, truth should always be that reality. And sometimes, though we like to think it's going to be something else, in the end, it can be a little bit of something else, as well as a lot of logical solutions, explanations, and so forth. So always do your research. Feel free to ask those people who have been in it for quite a number of years. And open your mind a little bit to understanding that not everything is going to be a ghost. Not everything may be a UFO. Not everything is going to be a Bigfoot or something that you saw stomp in the dark. But hey, that's the way it goes. It's that 1% that might be that keeps us looking. We'll talk to you next week. And enjoy your weekend.